Hello Namibia, from the red sands of the Kalahari to the misty shores of Swakopmund, from the quiet hills of Opuwa to the wide open plains of Maheke, and right here in the heartbeat of Windhoek, a very warm good afternoon to you, wherever you are and whomever you're tuning in. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, your storyteller and your Monday news broadcaster right here on Eagle FM, keeping you company up until 14:30. Now, of course, it's Monday, the 20th of October, 2025, and that means to bring you a week, a fresh cannabis, and a whole lot of stories are waiting to unfold. Mondays, of course, are known for reset button, a chance to refocus, recharge, rewind, and rewind ourselves that every small step counts towards something bigger. You're tuned into On the Reader News Analysis, the show where headlines meet heartlines. We go beyond the breaking news to unpack the meaning, the moments, and the movement behind Namibia's biggest stories. And remember, this conversation belongs to all of us. So share your voice, your views, and your vibes on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp. And don't forget to tune in via the Eagle FM app or the Eagle FM website. Because right here on the Reader News Analysis, your perspective doesn't just join the dialogue, it defines it. So whether you're kicking in from where you're kicking off your week in Otavi, taking a lunch break in Ongwediver, running errands in Swakopmund, or chilling in with a cool drink in Katimamuru, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as your Monday companion. Stay tuned, because coming up next, we'll dive into the stories, setting the tone for this brand new week, and finding out what's really on the radar for Namibia this Monday. Now let's jump straight into these top stories. Pharmacy Week has officially been launched by the Ministry of Health and Social Services, aiming to highlight the critical role pharmacies play in promoting health, ensuring safe medication use, and strengthening Namibia's healthcare system. Speaking at the launch, Dr. Bonnie Singu, President of the Pharmacy Council and Associate Dean at the University of Namibia's School of Pharmacy, noted that the pharmacy profession records the least cases of professional misconduct, compared to other health fields. Dr. Seningu emphasized that the week serves not only to celebrate the contributions of pharmacists, but also to raise awareness about responsible pharmaceutical care and the importance of upholding ethical standards within the profession. He also called on the pharmacist to keep developing themselves and educating themselves as new ideas and new stuff keep evolving. Let's now take a listen to Dr. Singu.
It's important that we value our numbers. We are not looking for quantity though, it is the quality. And that is what I want to talk about today. So I've also observed that as we grow in numbers, we are also growing in cohesion. And this is important. This is really, really important, because systems usually begin to kind of disintegrate the bigger they grow, isn't it? But what I'm seeing is that with pharmacy, we are becoming more cohesive and much more closer and more united as we become more and more. And this is good for us, because this means that our profession has a future and we will thrive wherever we are going. Looking at social media statuses and so on, you can see the interest that colleagues have in the profession. I had a soft spot for Rundu Hospital. I saw people there dressed in traditional attire in front of the hospital with drums. With drums. I knew already that drums can actually heal. But these guys are taking it another level. And this is the kind of attitude we need to have towards our profession. We must take ownership. Without wasting time, today I would like to talk about becoming the best version of ourselves. Dear pharmacists, interns, students, and all pharmacy personnel across Namibia, as we celebrate Pharmacy Week, I want to speak directly to the heart of who we are, a community of passionate professionals who chose this path not just to dispense medicines, but to make a difference. This year, I want us to reflect on something deeper: self-development and personal growth. Because the truth is, the strength of our profession depends on the growth of every single one of us. Each of us carries potential far greater than the job title we hold today. But potential means nothing without action, learning, and courage. The pharmacy world is changing. Technology is reshaping how we deliver care. Patients are becoming more informed, and health systems are demanding innovation. The only way to stay relevant and impactful is to keep evolving. Change is constant. Don't remain the same person you were 5 years ago. Otherwise, it would be akin to the proverbial brontosaurus, the dinosaur, which while it was stuck to eating grass, things were evolving and it died away. So what does self-development mean for us as pharmacy professionals? It means committing to continuous learning. Not because someone requires it, but because you want to stay sharp, informed, and excellent. Read, ask questions, attend workshops, learn new skills from pharmacovigilance to data analytics, leadership, digital health, or research. AI is the thing. Learn one or two AI tools, guys. You have to learn AI tools. Don't be left behind. The best pharmacists are those who never stop learning. Secondly, growth is not just about technical skills. It is also about who we are becoming as a people. Build your emotional intelligence. We don't want you to be shouting at the poor patients who are just demanding their constitutional right to receive access to health care. Okay? Balance your emotional intelligence. Learn to communicate better. I'm really impressed by Ms. Johannes' way of speaking. She makes sure she puts weight on every word she says, you know? Learn to communicate better, to lead with empathy, and to work well in teams. Kathutra Hospital is just one of the best places to work nowadays, I think. Let's give a round of applause. Yeah, there's a team there, and I am just impressed. Sometimes when I get back from some tough meeting and I sit in my office, I'm thinking, I want to go and work for Kathutra Hospital. I want to go back. You will discover that how you treat others, patients, colleagues, even students, says more about your professionalism than your qualifications ever could. Third, surround yourself with mentors and peers who challenge you. Find that mentor. Some of you are running away from me now because you remember how tough I was on you, but it was all because of love. Pure love I had for you. Don't run away from tough mentors. Find that tough mentor, associate yourself, and learn from them. Surround yourself with colleagues who want to push themselves so that you can go with them. Growth happens when you are uncomfortable, when you stretch beyond what you think you can do. Find people who inspire you and be that person also to inspire someone else. If each of us lifts one person up, imagine how stronger the pharmacy profession in Namibia will become. And don't forget about personal wellness. Your mind, body, and spirit fuel your professional success. All of us are a package as we are. It is true. When you have a baby, they call it a bundle of joy. They're a bundle by themselves. They're a human being by themselves. All of us are a package. We carry something. But you need to be sound in mind, strong in body, and strong in spirit so that we can benefit from you. Make sure you exercise. Make sure you eat right. Make sure you go to the gym. Make sure you prioritize your mental health so that you can serve us for many more years to come. Burnout helps no one. Take time to rest, reflect, and recharge. Growth is not a race. It is a journey of becoming the best version of yourself step by step. As young pharmacists and future leaders, you are the generation that will redefine pharmacy in Namibia. You have the creativity. Look at all those things there. Did you appreciate that? Do you see that? This is creativity. Okay, and I can tell you, I'm proud. Everything I'm associated with, I'm proud. Our students at the UNAM School of Pharmacy, the creativity is through the charts. Just too creative. And you are not ready for that. Prepare yourself. Brace yourself for the students coming through. So, you have the creativity, the technology, and the vision to turn challenges into opportunities. Some of you might have noticed there was a song playing as we were just gathering together. That song was initiated, created last year's pharmacy week right here by one of us, Ms. Olivia Thikamenu, who is not here. She actually went into AI. And that song you are hearing, that nice pharmacy song for Namibian pharmacies, is an AI-generated song. AI, and it's there. That shows you how youthful, rejuvenated, forward-looking a profession we are. So, believe in your voice, own your growth, and commit to excellence. Because the future of our profession depends on what we do today. This Pharmacy Week, let's not just celebrate what we've achieved in the past. Let's recommit to becoming better. Better learners, better leaders, and better people. Pharmacy is not just a career, it is a calling. And those who keep growing will always rise. Pharmacy is not pharmacy. Pharmacy is our profession, and we must guard it, promote it, and keep it going. Thank you, and happy Pharmacy Week to every pharmacy warrior out there.
And now let's take a listen to Malima Kapirika, pharmacy manager at the Pharmacy Board of Namibia, who indicated that the Health Professions Council of Namibia, also known as HPCNA, now only has one registration that regulates health professions at the launch of the Pharmacy Week held today. But before that, let's make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
That is the document that we will refer to, that you should all refer to and you should all read. It's a very important document. A lot has changed. There's a lot of interesting changes that will allow us to do a lot more. The most important difference I should probably highlight at this stage is that we now only have one legislation to regulate health professions. So there is no longer Pharmacy Act, there is no longer Pharmacy or Nursing Act, there is no Medical and Dental Act, there is only one act that regulates all healthcare professionals. So from doctors to emergency care practitioners, you all have one act now, and that is called the Health Professions Act. So it's very important as a healthcare professional that you take some time to go through that document and understand the provisions, understand what it enables you to do, where it enables you to participate in furthering the public health of this country. So a bit about the changes. Of course, we only have one regulatory body now, the Health Professions Council of Namibia. So that regulates all healthcare professionals. For modularity, the Act also establishes boards that deal with profession-specific matters. So those new boards would be what corresponds to the former councils that we had. So you will have your nursing board that will deal with nursing-specific matters. You will have your allied health professions board that deals with allied healthcare professionals, pharmacy board, the medical and dental board. So these boards are now in charge of dealing with the profession-specific matters. So I'll start with a few functions of the healthcare profession, or rather the Health Professions Council of Namibia. So there are quite a few, as you might be aware. We have to deal with registrations and all those things. But for today's occasion, I would like to highlight a few things. The first one is that the HPCNA has the mandate to promote and regulate interprofessional collaboration.
Okay, so this is important given the circumstances of how medical professionals are practicing in this country currently. We would like to see more collaboration. We would like to see more more projects that are not one-sided, right? Of course, the main function of the Health Professions Council is to protect public health. Okay, our main client, our main boss is the public. Okay, so the you will have a friend in the Health Professions Council, insofar as your profession is advancing public health. Anyone and anything that detracts from that goal will find a very formidable enemy in the HPCNA. So we are all here to further the interests of public health. So we in so doing, we recognize the value that healthcare professionals bring. We also know about the potential of what more that can be done. So that is what we would like to enable. We have various ways in which we are trying to achieve this goal. From primarily our main modus operandi, which is legislation, to how we are able to collaborate with US professionals. So the first one is legislation. Okay, so the professions are growing. We see new diseases all the time. We see new pandemics. We get new therapies. So things are always changing. So to enable the professionals to do more, to do better, we are working on a few things, very exciting things. You'll be happy to hear these things. So the first one I should probably mention is on the part of legislation. There are several regulations that are currently in draft. That is to say, at some point you will hear from us and we will call you for a stakeholder consultation on these documents. One of them I'm sure you want to hear is about specialization. All right, we need to update them. We have new things now. We have new things. Some of you are here, very new. There's not even a label to put on you yet. That is how brand new what we have is. Okay, so these are skills that we have. These are valuable skills in advancing public health. But to ensure optimum utilization of this human resource that we have, we need some enabling mechanisms. So from how we register specialists to what type of specialists we are going to recognize in the first place, to what they are allowed to do once they are registered as specialists, that is the sort of details that we need to sort out in these regulations. We cannot prescriptively just tell you, the professionals, that this is what you can and cannot do. We rely on you. That lady they gave the other day, she said she showed me something, very important paper like this. I wouldn't know, right? So that is the point of professional self-regulation, that you as professionals, we do recognize that you understand and buy into furthering of public health, and you understand the skills and knowledge that you have, and you are able to bring that forward for us to work better. So you will have.
Let's pause here for now, but we'll be back to continue right here on the Reading News Analysis. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back, and now we are joined in studio by a pharmacist, that is Amuntu Afeni. A very good afternoon to you, Amuntu Afeni, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Very good afternoon to you too.
Amuntu Afeni, it's Pharmacy Week. Just exactly how do you feel about it being Pharmacy Week, and what is it that you're reflecting on as a pharmacist in regards to this?
Yes, thank you so much for the question. It's actually a very important week, more especially that this profession is underlooked, or people look down upon it. When we actually had, we have a big role to play or to play in the society. This includes sharing of information on medication, contraindication, and more other important things or aspects of medicine that are very important to the patient. So I'm really delighted to have this session with you.
Yeah.
On a Pharmacy Week.
Now, Amuntu Afeni, of course, it is quite true that I think we often overlook pharmacists and their role to play in society, and also their role to play in our health, because at the end of the day, when I do visit a doctor, I then have to go and buy the medication at the pharmacy. And if the doctor could also make a mistake, then the pharmacy is able to identify that and refer me back to the doctor to get the right medication or perhaps even the right dose. But here now I want to ask you, what are some of those challenges that pharmacists face? And also, what are some of those things that pharmacies hope that the ministry perhaps can also improve on in terms of them being able to do their work more effectively and efficiently?
Just as you said, pharmacy is one of the profession that is looked down upon, even by patients. Since it has to start with the doctor or the nurse, so those are the prescribers actually. So patients always start with those people, and they put their trust more on the doctors and or prescribers. So there comes now a time when patients who have come to the pharmacy, and let's say maybe a medication was not well prescribed or the dosing was not correct, you try to maybe correct the patient. Or the thing is that a patient actually come with their attitudes already to the pharmacy. You know, they believe whatever the doctor says.
Yeah.
They believe whatever the prescriber says. And when you are trying to come in, because we are actually the last people to be seen by the patients. And if a mistake is not picked up at the pharmacy, it means that mistake reaches to the patient.
Exactly.
So this is one of the challenges that we are facing at the pharmacy, lack of trust from the patients. Yes, and also at some points, also the prescribers.
That is the doctors.
Yes. That's the doctors and nurses.
Okay.
Yes.
Of course. Now, looking at Namibia's overall pharmaceutical aspect, and of course, we will not shy away from the truth to say that Namibia has been lagging behind, of course, with some medications out of stock here and there, and being brought back, and medication also being very expensive. For you as a pharmacist, what is it that you would say? Should you be given the platform to actually put you on the table to say, give the proper advice that perhaps you think we should move in, the direction that we should move in order to bring Namibia's pharmaceutical aspect, you know, at the level where really we when we talk about medication that is out of stock is something that is of the past, what is it that you would bring on the table to say maybe we should explore certain avenues?
The issue of medication being out of stock, include a lot of different stakeholders. I really think that is a matter of stakeholders, all the stakeholders involved in supplies coming together, trying to solve or trying to work together so that they can reach this one common goal, which is availability of all pharmaceutical stocks. And then now on, and because the other issue is also that, you know, Namibia, we have one one pharmaceutical supply, of which I think by now some of the products, actually, we are unable to get some of the products from there. I think there was some issue from there. I don't know if it's still resolved.
Yeah.
But the main problem or the main issue that we have is that we are really not having a fully capable supplier that's able to supply all necessary equipment and medical needs to the country, you know. Given the population and also given number of a variety of medication that are actually needed to make sure that the health is well provided or everything is well catered for.
Yeah.
So I think the main challenge is that we will need to have our own supplies, medical supplies, or a competent supplier that will be able to supply all the necessary medications, or most of them, if not all. Yes.
Amuntuafeni, when a prescription has been written down by a doctor and perhaps the dosage of that prescription is quite long, quite wrong, an error from their part, not something perhaps that is intentional, considering that, of course, they are human beings as well, and then it comes over to the pharmacist where they have to now dispense this medication to the patient, and unfortunately, the pharmacist also is not able to pick it up. What is it that you would say to the public, to us, those of us that consume now that medication, what should the public educate themselves on? Those basic things that every person should know who then takes medication at one point or another, you know, even if it's just Panado. What are those, some of those things that we often overlook for ourselves that can be then avoided?
Yeah, in most cases you find that a public facility or any other facility, health facility, you find out that our people are more ignorant on when it comes to medicine. I don't know. It's something that's just happening there.
Yeah, that's true.
In the community.
Yes.
That you find a patient is not even, you know, is not worried what kind of medication they are taking. You know, they don't even know the names of their medication.
Mm. In fact, they come to the pharmacist to say, I'm taking that blue pill that is like the.
Yes. Exactly. So you find the patient is coming. No, I was taking this medicine. It's a blue one or it's a red one. You know, they are. It's a patient's responsibility.
They're very ignorant. Is that the right word?
Yes. So they are ignorant of their medication. They don't know consider knowing their own medication. You really find a patient. I'm looking for one medicine, but which medicine are you looking for? I don't know the name. So, you know, health, it's a system where, you know, we do this as a group that involves prescribers, nurses, doctors, pharmacists, as well as a patient. So for us to ensure that, you know, the correct medication is given, for us to ensure that, you know, we don't miss a point here or there, we need to work together as a team.
Indeed.
That involve prescribers, pharmacists, and even the patient himself. So I really emphasize that patients will educate themselves on some of the medical terms. You know, even knowing your medication name.
Yes,
it's really that simple.
And also maybe also reading those is it what you call pamphlets or leaflets that usually accompany the particular drug that one has been prescribed. For instance, maybe you can also educate us for the next few minutes on things such as the adverse effects, the indications, or the contraindications. Just what are those in layman's terms, Amon?
Yes. Because when you're talking about medicine, you know, a pharmacist is also called a chemist. You know, it involves a lot of chemistry that has to do with the body and the chemicals that we are taking in into our bodies. So it's really important, but there are some things that are of common knowledge, like dosages, how many milligrams you are taking, you know, which medication you are taking, what are some of the contraindications, and I'm just emphasizing on this point, because I want us as pharmacists in all the corners of the country, the one that are at the forefront of giving service to our patients, to make sure that we always, you know, provide this important information to the patients. You know, sometimes we find that one of the medications maybe it cannot be taken with alcohol, it cannot mm-hmm. be taken with maybe milk.
Cannot be taken by a pregnant woman.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then there are also other things also, you know, to find a patient like that facility. But they are also having, okay, let's say a patient is coming to, in many cases, you find that a patient is coming to a public facility.
Yeah.
When they are also seeing, a private, health professional, let's say a doctor, mm-hmm. for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way, you find that you give this patient specific medication of which they already have from a private prescriber. So it's, you know, a medical it's about working together.
True.
You know, telling your prescriber what you are already taking, telling your pharmacist what you are already taking, or sometimes they are, because even the body itself, you know, we have different bodies. You know, the chemistry of individuals are different.
Mm-hmm.
You find that someone will take paracetamol and they don't have problem. And the next person might take it and they might feel drowsiness, you know, other things. So it's always important to share this important information with your health provider.
Mm.
So that will really help much. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, what's your message to pharmacists out there all over Namibia and all over the country? What is it that you're calling on them to uphold as we celebrate Pharmacy Week?
Yes, my message to my colleagues is that this is the week where we are remembering Pharmacy Day, and we are at the forefront of saving lives, helping the patients. We really have to do our duty. We really have to do our responsibilities as pharmacists. Wherever we are, make sure that we label our medicine properly. Make sure that we share all unnecessary information to our patients. And also make sure that we, you know, psychologically, mm-hmm. we have shared, we have helped all our patients. You know, you find that, many of the patients who really come up to us, you know, they entrust us with their own lives. So we should really add to that standard. And also, the other things, we should really share information, more especially for this week, but not only for this week. We should really share information to our patients.
Yes.
Yes. So I think that's the most important thing
mm-hmm.
that we all as pharmacists should do. And also, other things also, you know, ensuring supply chain management. Ensuring that all medications are available, make all efforts to avail stock in all our facilities,
mm-hmm.
and just to make sure that, you know, or ensure general health for the public.
Absolutely. Amuntu Afeni, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. We sure hope that you do go ahead and enjoy this Pharmacy Week. Perhaps somebody, maybe your patients will bring you something right at the pharmacy, right?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much. And there you had it from Amuntu Afeni. He is a pharmacist. I don't want to disclose exactly where, just in case. But anyway, nonetheless, a pharmacist, as we go ahead and celebrate Pharmacy Week this week, pharmacists play a vital role in healthcare, and their responsibilities include medication dispensing, that is accurately dispensing or handing out medications to patients, ensuring the right medication and the right dosage, because that's very important, as well as patient counseling. They also help provide patients with information on medication use, their potential side effects, and the disease management, as well as medication therapy management. They review patients' medication regimes, to ensure efficiency and safety, because there are certain situations where perhaps a patient has been on this particular medication and it's not really working for them. So they work together alongside the doctors to help give or provide the right type of the right channel of medication for that particular patient. Now, I want to educate us on some terminologies that perhaps a lot of us might not be aware of. Now, when we're discussing medication, several key terms or terminologies are essential to understand. One of them is called indications. Now, as we are speaking about drugs or medications, indications, this refer to the specific conditions or diseases a medication is intended to treat, to prevent, or to manage. Examples of this are medications. Indications might include treating hypertension, managing diabetes, or relieving pain. For instance, paracetamol is particularly meant for pain and other aspects, but that would be an indication. An indication will now say for the management of pain relief. Contraindications are situations or conditions under which a medication should be used because it may, should not be used because it may be harmful to the patient. So in terms where you see a medication is labeled and there is a labeling that says contraindications, that shows that this type of reason, this particular medication should not be used. For instance, pregnancy, maybe a particular drug, a very strong analgesic drug that is then written contraindication, breastfeeding or pregnant women. That shows that those that are breastfeeding or those that are pregnant or perhaps those that are maybe taking another drug already or perhaps those that have kidney failures should not take that particular type of medication. And then adverse effects, these are known as side effects, and they are what reactions of unwanted or harmful reactions to the medications. For example, common adverse effects include nausea or dizziness or allergic reactions. Now, some particular medications, let's say, for instance, penicillin, can have some side effects because it's made out of nuts, also it contains some sort of nuts. So then for those people who are very allergic to nuts, then some of the side effects that could come along with it. So for instance, when you educate yourself on the adverse effects of a drug, let's say you take a particular drug and then you have read that this drug can have some side effects or adverse effects of drowsiness or perhaps sluggardness or blurry vision. That is to tell you that the drug may be working, of course, but it may come with such side effects. So when those side effects happen, then you shouldn't be so tensed up or stressed or worried about it unless it's very severe. Then, of course, you are then encouraged to consult your doctor. Now, other also important terminologies are dosage, which is the amount of medication at one time or over a specific period, interactions, the effects of a medication when taken with other medications or food or substances. Precautions, these are special considerations or warnings about using a medication, such as monitoring, for instance, side effects or adjusting dosages in specific populations, such as the elderly or pediatric patients. So you take a particular drug will be administered to you or prescribed to you, but then you should be cautious. So these are now called precautions. Be cautious in patients, or maybe do vigorous monitoring to them when you've given them this particular medication. Warnings, these are serious or potential life threatening risks associated with a medication, often highlighted in broad text in medication guides or package inserts. There comes an instance, where a particular drug has to be administered, especially in life-threatening situations. But then again, one has to be, or the administrator, the healthcare provider has to be very cautious or has to monitor you vigorously, to see any potential hazards or potential adverse effects that come with that. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more to discuss right here on the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On The Radar News Analysis. Now in other news, last Friday at the unveiling of the Problematic Mindset Volume 2 by Dr. Veronica Theron of the One Economy Foundation revealed that gender-based violence in Namibia is largely perpetrated by victims' intimate partners, with 90% of victims reportedly knowing their abusers. Now I'm joined by our reporter and journalist, Dwight Links. A very good afternoon to you, Dwight Links. And let's get right into this conversation.
How are you doing, Happy? And good afternoon to the listeners.
I'm doing well, Dwight.
Happy? Yeah, you can ask.
Mm-hmm. Dwight, you were there at the launch of the Problematic Mindset with much more of what Dr. Veronica Theron highlighted. Kindly get into it.
Well, Happy, so the particular discussion is a second report that the One Economy Foundation obviously sponsored in terms of looking into the prevailing impacts and the prevailing reoccurrence of gender-based violence in Namibian communities. So part of the discussion that Dr. Theron highlighted in the findings, and this was presented obviously at this youth summit that took place last Friday, was a discussion of why does it happen? Where do most of the perpetrators end up? Are they primarily, does the functionaries of the maintenance of law and order, do they actually process the perpetrators, or is this a scenario of you only see the results of what happened to the victims in the broader context? So what I'm meaning to say is that in many cases, it has come out from various aspects, either from Ministry of Gender, either from Ministry of Health, or either from the Namibian police itself, where they try to give insights to the Namibian public about the various statistics and the information that they themselves gather as public entities that have to deal with this particular social problem, is that they always look in terms of who are the victims? Do the victims know the perpetrators? Are the perpetrators also identified in community settings? And then they look at the other prevailing circumstances or conditions that would be present in terms of IAE, which led to a event of a gender-based violence event taking place, and to what severity it took place. So the particular report itself, as you highlighted to the listeners, is the second edition of this particular of its kind,
mm-hmm.
generated by the One Economy Foundation. Mm-hmm. Now, to get into the nitty-gritties, regarding what the findings were illustrate from this discussion, is that just like you highlighted in the opening statement to this particular discussion,
mm-hmm.
is that it was discovered that more than 90% of the perpetrators, more than 90% of the cases or instances, is that the victim is someone that was either in a romantic relationship with the perpetrator,
yeah.
or that they do know the perpetrator, meaning someone that they personally know a lot. Then There's also a discussion in terms of how were some of the other information also collected. And then in many cases, Dr. Teron outlined that they had to speak to frontline service providers, so which includes social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, religious representatives from communities, so clergymen, teachers, medical professionals, police, the correctional services office, magistrates and prosecutors, and then also communities. So they had to go to a far-reaching, very far net in terms of information, gathering this data and information, mm-hmm. in order to understand how deep it is. Mm-hmm. Now, Happy, I'm going to draw the listeners back to the particular coverage that we as Eagle FM gave back in 2020 when the SGBV demonstrations occurred here in Windhoek and at the coast, primarily because in many cases, many Windhoek residents during the period of COVID and lockdowns, these particular demonstrations took place, which was based on the very highly publicized death of a young lady at the coastal region who was found in a very shallow grave on the beach in at the coast. I'm not gonna mention her name out of obvious respect to her surviving family, mm-hmm. but the resultant demonstrations were obviously an outcry by the demonstrators and the organizers. Predominantly, many of them were young women and young men who sympathized with the initiative in terms of the outcry towards gender violence against young women and specifically women and the manner in which the violence happens. Now, in that particular discussion, it came out specifically that it was predominantly a question of who or how does gender-based violence occur, or how does violence against women, femicide, you can call it femicide as well, how does it actually occur? And in many cases, in one instance there as well, it was revealed that in many cases, the perpetrators are people that the victims knew. So on a regular basis, you see the reoccurrence of the same aspect of data or information being highlighted. Because, for example, what is highlighted by the report itself, they note that the perpetrator findings revealed a pronounced gender dynamic, with 87% of perpetrators being male, and 82% of the victims being female, which underscores the disproportionate impact on gender-based violence on women and girls. So just particularly in that one statement there, Happy, it does signal specifically that, there's nothing unique, but you do see the same particular trend still continuing.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, Dr. Theron, Dwight, am I saying Theron?
Theron.
Okay. Dr. Theron also noted that substance abuse was a contributing factor in many of the documented cases. Why is it that this is still prevalent? Even though, of course, we know some of those things, but still, it's something that is still very prevalent, Dwight.
Well, if you have to look at the discussions regarding the data that obviously comes out from this, Happy, is that in one scenario, these are obviously data sets that even Dr. Theron cited comes through from correctional services, police officers. It's not just from the victims and from the perpetrators that were obviously accessed and were interviewed, but it does come through from what is the most common influencing factor primarily when the event of, let's for example say, a rape happens.
That's a very good question, Dwight, sincerely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the particular dimension that they looked at was, it doesn't come through from one particular source, but that it's something that resonates through all the sources that they access. And when you've got to look at the discussion of why substances are always the reoccurring theme or the reoccurring underlying condition mm-hmm. under which these particular events take place, they cite specifically that it was either that both victim and perpetrator had consumed, either being alcohol or one other particular narcotic substance. And when the police have to interview both parties, because now the event happened and the victim now feels aggrieved about what had transpired, court, police get reported to, the police now have to respond, the police interview both people, Now it's a question they realize that both parties were under the influence of one or other substance. And it makes the discussion for, in many cases, like Dr. Teron highlighted, difficult for police, difficult for psychologists, difficult for clergy people, meaning religious leaders, difficult even for the psychiatrist to try and deal with underlying issues, but potentially which led up or built up to the event of, let's for example say, the victim becoming a victim at that particular instance. And then there's also the overriding theme, Happy, in terms of that Dr. Teron highlighted and unveiled that the report also gave instance in terms of that that the occurrence of GBV, for example, the relationship between a victim and a perpetrator, is that it had been continuous violence that the victim had been exposed to. So it's not one-off events. It's a build-up of said particular smaller events, smaller instances, up until the event that it comes about.
Interesting. Right, Links, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Not a problem, Abby.
Okay. Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association will host its elective annual general meeting on Wednesday, 5th November 2025 at 17:30? Now, the meeting will be held virtually, allowing alumni to join from all corners of the world. All UNAM alumni are invited to be part of this important occasion as we reflect on achievements, discuss key motions, and elect a new executive committee. AGM link will be shared closer to the date, and all reports will be available on the UNAM website. Don't miss this opportunity to connect and shape the alumni legacy.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushenji fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore za tuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ineko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and now this is the part where we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and currencies. Now, of course, $1 today is equal to 17 Namibian dollars and 33 cents. €1 is equal to 20 Namibian dollars and 19 cents. £1 sterling is equal to 23 Namibian dollars and 23 cents. £1 Swiss franc is equal to 21 Namibian dollars and 86 cents. £1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. Now moving over to trading economics. Italy's current account recorded a surplus of 4.7 billion euros in August 2025. That is more than doubling the 1.7 billion euros recorded in the same month last year. Now the increase was mainly driven by a wider goods at 2.5 billion euros versus 1.8 billion euros in August 2024 and services at 1.8 billion euros versus 0.8 billion euros surplus. Now at the same time, the primary income surplus widened sharply to 2.2 billion euros from 0.5 billion euros, while the secondary income deficit widened slightly to 1.9 billion euros from 1.5 billion euros. The Eurozone construction output increased 1.1% year-on-year in August 2025, easing from a 0.7% rise in July. Output eased for civil engineering at 2.6% versus 3.6% in July, and specialized construction activities at 2% versus 2.5%. In addition, production fell faster for construction of buildings. Among the bloc's largest economies, construction fell in Germany, France, and Spain, but rose in Italy. From the previous month, construction output went down 0.1% after a 0.5% gain in July. Hong Kong's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate climbed to 3.9% in the 3 months ending September 2025. That is the highest since August 2022, up from 3.7% in the previous month. Now, the number of unemployment rose by approximately 4,600 to 155,600, while total employment slipped 6,100 to 3.67 million. Jobless rates increased across several key sectors, with the social work activities and construction industries particularly affected. Now, youth unemployment, that is of age 20 to 29, rose to 8.0%, the highest since October 2021, up from 7.8% in August. Meanwhile, the labor force participation rate edged down to 57.1% from 57.2%. Looking ahead, some sectors are expected to continue facing employment challenges amid economic restructuring and rising external uncertainties, and the government will monitor the labor market while supporting job seekers. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly to tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders. Stay tuned right here.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Message so to the not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Free State in South Africa aims for a 95%.
Let's take you to the Free State now, because the education department there says it's got social workers, psychologists and counselors on standby to offer support to this year's matric class if the need arises. The class of 2025 will start their national senior certificate final exams from tomorrow. Can you believe it? SABC News reporter Makgala Masiteng is part of our team watching developments there, and she joins us now live. And Makgala, I'm not going to ask whether you still remember your matric class year, but I'm sure what you can recall is how stressful that time can be.
Indeed, Ayanda, I know that I was nervous for sure. So we are coming live from Kagiso Comprehensive Secondary School. As you can see behind me, we are in a classroom of some of those matric learners who will be sitting for that National Senior Certificate final examination. So just before I speak to the social worker, Ayanda, as you have indicated that the department has made sure that there will be social workers available 24 hours to try and assist learners if the need arises. I just want to bring in just two of them just to talk about how are they feeling, are they prepared. In fact, in this school, we understand that there are 350 learners who will be sitting for matric examination. So you could we can imagine the hard work that they had to put in, of course, to ensure that each and every learner is prepared. I'm going to speak to Mwibonile Pacha. Thank you very much. How are you feeling? You're about to start your final examination.
Indeed, I'm nervous, but as much as I'm nervous, I'm just excited because this is the end. After these final examinations, I'll be out there putting my life, seeing what I do next and all.
You seem very confident. Do you already know what you're going to be doing after receiving your results?
Yes, I know. I'll be definitely going to a university out there out of Bloom after getting my results. Yes.
I can hear that you love out there. You just want yourself out of Bloemfontein. Thank you very much. Let me bring in Nicholas Hugo. How are you feeling? Are you ready for your final examination?
Hi, ma'am. I'm feeling a bit nervous, like my companion has said. But I'm feeling very confident with the amount of hard work we have put in from the beginning, the sleepless nights, as well as the extensive practice I've been putting on. So I am extremely confident, and I'm looking forward to writing my final papers.
I understand that you guys are here for final push. How is it?
It has been a rocky climb, but it is fun because we get to help one another. It is, I will say, beneficial because we get to learn a lot from each other. There are teachers on an everyday basis. We are learning a lot, and I think we are indeed pushing for the finals.
Also, Free State matriculants get a psychosocial support ahead of the exams.
On to the story. The Free State Department of Education says it has social workers, psychologists and counselors on standby to offer psychological support to this year's matric class if the need arises. The class of 2025 will start with this year's National Senior Certificate final examinations tomorrow. SABC News reporter Makhala Masiteng is on that story. Can't believe we're already there, Makhala. So tomorrow, the matric class of 2025 sit for the final exams. How are things going in terms of preparations and readiness on behalf of the department? Makhala, good morning.
Good morning, Leanne. Yes, we will be going to Kagiso Secondary School at the location here in Bloemfontein just to check the arrangements as they prepare. Of course, we know that the first paper they will be writing from tomorrow, but the department has indicated that 40,000 learners are expected to be sitting for this National Senior Certificate examinations this year, and they're still saying that they are targeting 95% pass rate with over 40% of bachelor passes. But you would remember, Leanne, that what the class of 2025 is looking at, in fact, the standard was set very high by the class of 2024 here in the Free State, where they achieved way above 90% pass rate and also getting 48.2% of bachelor passes here in the Free State. In fact, breaking record. This was the first time in history, and also surpassing the target of the Department of the Free State, which is 90-40, where they were targeting to get a 90% pass rate and over 40% of bachelor passes. But of course, today the department will be in Kwakwa, where they have arranged a prayer and also that motivation for the class of 2025, where as part of preparations, of course, ahead of the start of examinations tomorrow, they are still saying they still want to maintain that first position when it comes to the results of matric. You'd remember that they have been maintaining that position for over now. It's been 6 years and consecutive where they've managed to get that first position when it comes to the results of the matric in the country. So they are still aiming for that. Preparations have been in place. Learners have been attending extra classes throughout the year. Some of them have been into camps to ensure that they are ready for these final examinations, Leanne.
Right, we leave it there and we wish them the best of luck. Makhala Masi.
Still in South Africa, talking about a crime emergency app that reports crime in real time. Let's take a listen.
Well, it's a Monday and this week in our tech segment, we're spotlighting. Welcome back. Well, it's a Monday and this week in our tech segment, we're spotlighting the Crime Emergency app, which lets its users report emergencies in real time with a panic button, photographs and videos. Now, Mapula Mailula, who's the founder of the NPO behind the app, joins us to discuss how tackling GBV and enhancing safety in South Africa has given birth to this. Thank you so much for coming through and welcome to Morning Live.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what inspired, you know, this app first and foremost, and also what problem were you trying to address?
What happened is I went through a lot of things, like I went through abuse growing up, and I think this has been caused by the absence of a mother. So I survived so many things, and it made me to come up with this kind of an idea to help others, not only myself, to overcome gender-based violence. And that's the main idea about this whole thing, to help others to survive it as I have survived it before.
Mm. Mm. So, Mapula, given that we see so many apps in the market, especially as it pertains to safety and security, so given that people might just be struggling with app fatigue, what sets this one apart? What are the features that you think sets it apart and it makes it something that everyone should have?
What set Crime Emergency app apart is it reports directly to the departments where you want to report from, like from the police station, from the hospital and firefighting departments. So what also set it apart is you can be able to log on and get the whistleblower option without you logging in, because the main thing that's bothering people from reporting crimes around this country is because of whistleblowers get to be named after they report people or report matters. So this one, it's very unique because of it also have these options whereby you can choose if you're a community member, if you're a police officer, and if you are working as something else besides being a community member, because it has rates and it rates you from what you do and how you have registered this application. And also it has cameras at the traffic lights whereby it will detect accidents and also hijackings happening near it, then it will link it to the station. For this part about it reporting directly is the main difference from other applications similar to it, yes.
So when you talk about cameras at traffic lights, explain to us, you know, that information, how do you mine that information? Do you own those cameras? How does it work?
The cameras will also be from us as the Crime Emergency App system inventors. It will work together with the application and the link, I mean the system at the stations. Yes, it's our cameras. Mm. But it also belong to whoever the stakeholders will be in use of the application, I mean the system part of it.
And how many of those cameras do you have currently, and where are they located?
Recently, we don't have any cameras at any traffic lights because we're waiting for the stakeholders to approve the system to be on their side or their end side, so that the citizen can have the application chain to themselves so that they can be able to report to them.
Mm. So, you know, just looking at this app and what you envisage it to do. What are you hoping, you know, this will assist with at the moment in terms of gender-based violence and, of course, other crimes that South Africans contend with?
I'm hoping that crime emergency application will help whoever is suffering from abuse or whoever is suffering from any crime to get help as urgent as possible. Because this matter we're facing in South Africa is that we get help after the scene has been done or whatever abuse we've been suffered. So a crime and emergency application will let you get an urgent emergency help as possible, soon as possible. So I'm hoping it will also reduce the crime rate we're facing in South Africa, because of the higher the crime, the more our economy drops. So I'm hoping that it will reduce the gender-based violence, all this other matter that we're facing, like drugs, drug addicts and all those kind of problems. So I'm hoping it will put us in a normal form and get us into a better way of living as South Africa as a whole.
Well, thanks so much for sharing with us this morning, founder of the groundbreaking crime emergency app, Mapula Mailula. And
meanwhile, in Zambia, beef export boosts excitement, Copperbelt farmers.
It is something that many farmers have for a long time wanted to see. The start of beef exports into the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now that the two countries have had a trade agreement to support the beef industry in Zambia, what sort of impact will this have on the Zambian economy? The Ndola and District Chamber of Commerce and Industry shared their thoughts on the development.
The Ndola Chamber of Commerce welcomes the government's move to diversify away from over-reliance on copper and other minerals to regional beef exports to boost foreign currency earnings and strengthen regional ties.
Some of the cattle farmers on the Copperbelt are excited and getting ready to export beef into the DRC.
Way back, or even before, you find that most traders have been offering us very low prices at farm gate. And this has led to a lot of losses at the farm gate, you know. So we are happy about this organized market, because now it means that we are going to have more profit.
But there are concerns that the development might lead to the shortage of beef in Zambia, as many farmers will focus on profit.
We are going to invest the retained profit back into the farms, okay? And then that will mean that we'll have more production at the farm level. And because of that, the forces of demand and supply will still stabilize the prices.
Ndola Chamber President Diana Kabaila says the move will lead to a better beef industry in Zambia.
The open export markets for beef will give both large-scale and rural smallholder farmers access to better prices and more reliable demand. The export market will also encourage investments in modern abattoirs and disease-free compartments to meet export standards. This will also create downstream industrial jobs in livestock production and strengthen domestic processing capacity.
Tavarek Seka, ZMBC News, Luansha.
Zambia is set to manufacture 750 medicines locally.
Zambia has partnered with Akums Drug Pharmaceutical Limited of India to manufacture various medicines at its plant located in the Lusaka South Multi-Facility Economic Zone. The manufacturing plant, which is the first of its kind, was commissioned, marking a historic milestone in the country's quest to produce its own medicines locally. President Hakainde Hichilema was represented at the commissioning by the Minister of Youth, Sports and Arts, Elvis Nkandu.
When the people of Zambia entrusted the new Don administration with leadership, and that was in August 2021, medicine availability in our primary health care facilities stood less than 44%, and we said this was unacceptable.
And Akums Drug Pharmaceutical Limited Managing Director said the company is one of the 50 leading world companies in the production of medicines and is approved globally.
This new pharmaceutical manufacturing facility, backed by Indian expertise, technology and investment, is more than just a business venture. It is an investment in Zambia's health sovereignty.
And Deputy Secretary to Cabinet, Finance and Economic Affairs, Siazongo Siakalenge, thanked the team comprising Ministry of Health Permanent Secretary Technico Kennedy Lishimpi and stakeholders from India for working hard to achieve the milestone.
I can assure you, negotiations at times were becoming very, very difficult until we realized both teams needed to have this groundbreaking today. For us, this is going to create stability in the supply chain of medicines in this country, and we are looking forward to that day when the first tablets or the first medicines are going to come out of this factory where we are standing.
And Zambia Development Agency Director General Albert Halwampa says Zambia is now experiencing high investments.
We are very confident, having been to carry out due diligence in India, the muscle, the capacity, and the technical ability of ACAMS leaves us with no doubt that this joint venture is unstoppable.
We are committed that the Zambian facility will meet those high quality standards and provide affordable medicines to Zambians. We are aware that this will require diligent and continuous efforts from us to commission the facility.
The pharmaceutical manufacturing plant will enable Zambia to manufacture over 750 essential medicines. These include specialized treatments such as cancer drugs, making it the envy of the region. Doreen Chembe, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Egypt calls for full implementation of the Gaza ceasefire.
When Egypt, Turkey and Qatar joined the United States in brokering a ceasefire deal that helped end the violence in Gaza, U.S. President Donald Trump declared that the war was finally over. It was expected that the leaders of the four countries would sign that deal at the peace summit attended by several global leaders in Sharm el-Sheikh. Instead, they only signed a set of principles which in theory would establish peace in the Middle East without naming any crisis in that declaration.
We're talking about Gaza mainly. So the plan was made to relieve the situation in Gaza. When it comes to the Palestinian state, this hasn't been mentioned really. Of course, we all wish that the Palestinian state be implemented very soon. God knows where. This is a bit of a tricky question.
Days before the ceasefire deal, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu insisted there would be no Palestinian state. That's despite many countries, including major Western ones, backing the creation of such a state during a vote at the UN General Assembly in New York last September.
It will not happen. A Palestinian state will not be established west of the Jordan River.
Trump has on his part repeatedly said that Israel's land area is too small and that it deserves more land. Leaders from across the world recently gathered in Egypt to show support for the deal, ending 2 years of war in Gaza that was agreed on at Sharm el-Sheikh. The implementation of the first phase of that plan has faced major challenges. Hamas has been struggling to find the remains of hostages and has called for heavy equipment needed to dig through rubble to find the bodies to be allowed into Gaza. Israel threatened to take action if Hamas failed to return all bodies. Israel has, on the other hand, been accused of hampering the flow of aid into the Strip. Both of them accuse the other of violating the current ceasefire. All these have complicated the next phases of negotiations, which are expected to focus on disarming Hamas and agreeing on a governance system for Gaza.
The second phase is in doubt regarding achieving security for either Hamas or Israel. Logically, Hamas arms cannot be taken away. Hamas has been controlling Gaza since 2007. Until this moment, Palestinian Authority on its own cannot establish security in Gaza because it is completely isolated from Gaza. The biggest threats remain to be internal fighting amongst Palestinians. Hamas won't allow anyone else to control Gaza. The Palestinian-Palestinian division is much deeper than the Palestinian-Israel conflict.
Many analysts, however, believe there is a chance for lasting peace in Gaza and the Middle East. They are pinning their hope on Trump's much-publicized quest to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Donald Trump
Donald Trump is psychologically driven by seeking peace or stopping wars to be labeled the man of peace. He is also trying to save the United States and its political embarrassment from Israel's actions, which put the United States in a critical political position.
The only one who can exert some pressure on Israel is the United States government, the United States Congress, the United States public opinion. So having a Palestinian state in the long run or in the short run is still a matter of it's an international demand. I'm optimistic that a Palestinian state might be initiated in the near future through some concessions from the Israeli side.
The push for peace in the Middle East has been given a major boost by the Gaza ceasefire reached in Sharm el-Sheikh. Getting the signing ceremony concluded, it appears, was the easier part of rolling out the peace plan. The hurdles standing in its way are huge, but so is the desire by many countries to see peace prevail in the Middle East. Adel Mahroui, CGTN, Cairo.
Hainana expands duty-free shipping as free trade port grows.
Hainan's duty-free stores experienced a shopping boom during China's National Day Golden Week, and a new policy is set to give that momentum an extra lift. The updated list of duty-free goods now covers 47 categories, including pet supplies, portable musical instruments, and small home appliances. Travelers aged 18 and above, including Hainan residents, can shop duty-free up to 100,000 yuan, that's about $14,000 a year. The policy comes as Hainan's free trade port prepares to launch a special customs operation in December. Industry insiders say the outlook is bright.
Goods will move more freely in the future. Customs clearance will be more efficient. For businesses like ours, the new tax incentives are significant. Product choices will also become richer.
Visitors from 86 countries can now enter Hainan visa-free. Hotels expect higher arrivals as the free trade port gears up for launch.
It will automatically attract more foreigners to come. It will manage and reduce prices of goods, and more companies will be entitled or also enticed to do business out of Hainan to go overseas. So I think it will be very beneficial.
Hainan recorded over 2 million border crossings so far this year, up 22%. Foreign travelers account for more than half, rising 45% year-on-year.
Mega resorts and bustling duty-free shops. This is the pulse of Hainan's tourism boom. And as the island prepares for its big moment in December, it's ready to welcome more tourists from across China and around the world. Sun Tianyuan, CGTN, Sanya, Hainan Province.
Meanwhile, Snapchat and several banks are among major apps that are down in Amazon Internet Services outage.
Geeta Gurumuthi, thanks for being with us. We're starting this out with breaking news. Many of the world's biggest apps and online games, including Snapchat, Duolingo and Roblox, have gone down, an issue affecting Amazon's cloud computing service, Amazon Web Services, which many websites and apps use. Well, dozens of firms are now reporting issues, including Fortnite, Ring, Zoom and some banks, including Halifax, Lloyds and the Bank of Scotland. Amazon say that engineers are working to try and mitigate the issue. Let's get more with our senior technology reporter, Chris Valence, who joins us live from Glasgow. Chris, just explain to us what we know that's happened here so far.
Well, what we're seeing is a major outage affecting dozens of big apps and online services. If you look at the outage tracking website, Down Detector, you can just see app after app is affected. We go from Snapchat. We can see reports of problems with Zoom, Signal, Fortnite, Slack, a whole host of some of the biggest apps. What seems to be behind this, and this is what some of the affected organizations are saying, is a problem with Amazon Web Services. Now, that's not a company that many people will have heard of, but its technology underpins just a huge proportion of the web services, the web apps that we use every day. Essentially, companies use Amazon Web Services to provide computing power, to provide, to store their data, to process the information that they have on Amazon's computers, enabling them to operate their business. So when Amazon Web Services goes wrong, all the companies that depend on Amazon Web Services have problems.
It shows how interconnected the whole system is and how interconnected we all are and how reliant we are, of course. What might have caused the problems for Amazon itself?
Well, the short answer is we don't know. What we have from Amazon at the moment is a very technical message posted to their status page, which is effectively a sort of a techie kind of note about the how their service is performing. It doesn't really tell us in detail what the cause is. I think the when you look at these big outages, quite often it's the result of an update, some improvement that's gone wrong. I mean, many people have an experience of sort of updating or changing something on their own computer, and it doesn't work out. The things don't work as well as they did before. In a way, some of these big outages can be attributed to things like that. It'll be some technical change, maybe, that they've rolled out, and it hasn't gone as planned. That's quite often the story with these outages. But here, we don't really know. We're awaiting more information.
Can it be something more sinister than an error?
Well, I mean, you would never say never with something like that. Obviously, cyber attacks are in everybody's mind. I don't think we've seen any evidence to support that at the moment. So, you know, don't assume a conspiracy when I can't use the actual phrase, but when something going wrong will do as an explanation, I would say.
And presumably, I mean, Amazon must have, you know, huge systems in place as backup systems. So for the fact that it's failed, what does that tell us?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, there is this big question about our dependence on a few critical services, how much the net relies on you know, a few key infrastructure services, how much, you know, multiple websites will use, say, a particular app, a particular system, and when there's a problem with that or an attack on that system, you know, everybody is affected. That degree of concentration, you know, people will argue about whether that's a good or a bad thing. Big companies like Amazon obviously have the resources to invest a lot in computer security, in their infrastructure, and you know, so they can bring a lot of money to the table to make sure things don't go wrong. But on the other hand, when they do go wrong, the situation is dire for everybody. So you know, that's a difficult thing to sort of answer, which is the better world. The world we live in at the moment does seem to be one where we rely a lot on these few critical services.
And there's some copy that's coming to us from Reuters, and I don't know whether you can translate this for us in terms, I don't know if you've seen it as yet, but AWS.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengi program brought to you by Lois Eshimi. And thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Howard from 16:30. At 1800 hours, David Chambe brings you Business Economic segment. From Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Monday ahead.